What's happening, guys? Happy Friday. And thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome. We got so much drama going on in MMA this week, from Jon Jones to Tom Aspinall yelling at each other to Dana White calling Merab stupid. We have a lot to get to in today's program. Plus, Michael Bisping says Israel Adesanya's championship days are behind him. I'm going to give you my thoughts on that later. But before we get there, let's begin today's show with this. You want the hot take of the day? Khalil Roundtree's going to walk through Alex Pereira. There you go. Tell me I'm wrong. Tell me that I'm wrong. If I'm wrong, how is Alex, where do you see the benefits? And isn't that a risk? I'm very interested in this booking for many reasons. I don't know if any of which are stronger, right? We brought in an NXT guy. Somebody from SmackDown is headed over to Raw. Generally, to get a fight on pay-per-view, you're in the pool of guys that fights on pay-per-view. And Roundtree, you couldn't tell me the last time you saw him do a fight on pay-per-view. So you're not overly familiar with him. That's the real reality. He's ranked number 8. They haven't gone that low. They haven't gone that low ever when higher-ranked guys that have never been given the opportunity are fresh, healthy, and available. And the point that I'm trying to make for you, you haven't considered Roundtree. You haven't watched Roundtree. You don't know a lot about Roundtree. You don't know he's finished his last 5 guys. You don't know about the power he's got in his hands. You don't understand how good his defenses are. You don't understand that some of his most impressive knockouts, and not just win his last 5, but some of his most impressive work comes when he's countering strikers. And as good as Alex Pereira is, he still makes the mistakes that the greats mistake. Like, the greats could just never, they just couldn't do it because it doesn't look cool in their mind. Like when you get better at fighting, you will get away from the fundamentals more and more. You just think it's cool. On your very first day, you will be taught to keep your chin down and keep your hands up. But once you start winning championships in kickboxing, believe me, those hands are going to be coming down. And that chin is going to be up. That's a display to the coaches in the world. I'm seasoned. I'm ready. I'm just that good. I just bring that to you. When you play that game, it really doesn't matter who the better kickboxer is. Like, you won't hear very many analysts when Alex Pereira is going to fight. We'll give him compliments in a lot of other areas, just not that one. No matter how many men you've beat, if your fights are here in 4-ounce gloves against tough talent, you are eligible and susceptible to be knocked out. I mean, I just bring that to your attention because what a risk this fight is. Would you have taken it? Would you have taken it? And it was, the strategy here was well played. When you have Ankalaev and you couldn't find me an example in history where you had a number one contender call out the champion, and you had the champion publicly accept the number one contender. And not one time, not mentioned over here, and only the hardcores have it. It's done many times. Many, many times, they have both agreed to fight. And you couldn't show me a time in history where that fight then was not made. So, and you really smart marks that can, but you understand if there's illness or injury, it changes what I'm talking about. And in this case, we've gone to number 8. But before we did it, we were tactical and we were strategic. And we released what number 1 was doing. So if the question was to ever come up, why did champion not get put against number 1? You have a very clear answer that came out over 3 weeks ago. Are you not paying attention? He has a fight. I don't want to hold the champion up. I've got to find him. I mean, you see, but there was a lot of wheels that went into motion here. And nothing is done on accident, not on this level. So it can be very fun. I enjoy that part. I enjoy guessing. I make one phone call and actually find out the answer. I don't want it. I want to guess with you guys. So we had a very clear strategy here, right? There was only one guy that Uncle Iov could fight. And that was Rachik, who you could give an excuse for his last loss, considering he's coming off of an injury. Oh, by the way, looked pretty good in the process. So that one match you could do. Both guys say yes, boom, you've done it. Wait yourself some time. Now it's very easy to go to somebody out of the norm. And it is very unusual, aside from short notice matches, that anybody out of the top five is brought in for a world title fight. You'd have a really, really hard time. Right? Now, again, I'm not talking about short notice. I'm not talking about extenuating circumstance, which creates massive opportunity in this sport because nobody loves to go to work less in life than a cage fighter. But outside of extenuating circumstance, we don't go out of the top five for a world title fight, man. We damn near made it into the top 10. So I'm telling you all these things because the one thing that is so common, it is so common from the playground to the pros. The guy that I know the most is the best. It is so incredibly common. I mean, I could play this game with you right this second, and I could ask you, who is the best boxer of all time? And most of you don't watch very much boxing, but all of you will say Muhammad Ali. And if you didn't, but I told you to name three, for sure, it's a literal statement. All of you would have said Muhammad Ali, and then you would have thought to yourself, who's next most popular? But the truth is, you couldn't tell me a championship that he won, right? You couldn't tell me if it was WBA, WIBA. You couldn't tell me which fights were championship fights. Where was he the champion? Where was he defending? You really don't know very much about him. But you would have put him as the greatest ever. You just did a moment ago. I caught you. I just am showing you a piece of your psychology. And I'm bringing that to your attention because Khalil Roundtree is going to roll over Alex Pereira. So all of this talk about Khalil doesn't deserve it, Khalil should not be in those positions. There's only one person that you need to believe that, and that is Alex Pereira. It's a very, very dangerous fight. And why on earth take the risk? We think that we know whether we do or not, but we have a consensus as to why not Uncle Iov, right? We have a consensus. It's Matt Lindland, Rich Franklin idea all over again. I understand. But to make believe you don't got a big problem here with Khalil, at least following that same concept of these guys get up and switch chairs because it's a bad matchup. Khalil Roundtree does his greatest work when he is under a striking attack. The better you are at striking, if you come and you use that offensively, and I'm sharing that with you because I don't think you guys know that. I don't think you know much about Khalil Roundtree. And the best way to get Alex to heavyweight, because see, we can make him heavyweight tomorrow. We just can't make him heavyweight tomorrow if he's got the 205-pound belt. The only problem with Alex in heavyweight is the 205-pound belt. We can all agree with that, right? Anyone not fighting for a title can move weight classes right now. No issue. So the best way to get him to heavyweight, just so you understand, it's not to clean out the division and keep doing more work and keep saying all the right things on social media. That is a way. That's a way. It takes a lot of time. It takes some luck. The best way, get him beat. Get the belt off him. He's free to become a heavyweight. You remember Eric the lawyer? Remember when I had to give Eric the business over the class action lawsuit? Does any of that ring a bell? All right, well, turned out, Eric and I, when we moved beyond that topic, get along pretty well. So Eric has now posted something on Twitter. I follow his social media. And every now and again, I mean, for the most part, he abuses social media, but every now and again, he'll get one and it's worth my time. Now, I don't know how to interpret this. If you guys do, please explain. Here's the shot. John Jones is standing in front of a pool. John Jones is showing an iPhone. Have you guys seen this? He's showing an iPhone and he's doing like a little bit of a dance, which, by the way, for some reason, I like when John Jones dances. He's not the world's best dancer, but there is something about it whenever I see him dance that I always continue to watch. Side note, let's go back. Pool's right behind him, okay? Showing off an iPhone. Now, at some point, without saying anything, right, he's doing the dance, and all of a sudden, he pitches the iPhone behind him, thus putting it into the swimming pool. Nothing is said. This must be an advertisement for something. There must be more to the video, but Eric, the lawyer, just took a clip, I think. Oh, and by the way, John is filming this whole thing, which would lead you to believe he has another cell phone. So it's essentially, hey, I'm throwing this phone away, but I've got this other cell phone. So it's like an anti-Apple ad. Like, hey, I don't like, hey, screw Apple, and he throws it in the phone, but he's holding a different Apple. Or it's quite the opposite, and it's an ad for Apple, which is, I have upgraded, I don't need this phone. I could be way off, by the way. It's all I know. If you guys know what's going on here, could somebody please tell me? Because big name brands such as Apple haven't come in the space, and a lot of big name brands have been afraid with John Jones. It might not be an advertisement at all. I'm just wondering what's going on. And it gets me going down a John Jones rabbit hole. I have never enjoyed John more than I am right now. Are you ready for that? I haven't seen anything out of John Jones that hasn't been interesting since he dropped the 205-pound belt. I enjoyed his Instagrams. I enjoyed watching him lift these crazy amounts of weights. I wish he would have done more and showed us the nutrition. Volkanovski did that. When Volkanovski had to get up to 55 to challenge Islam the first time, Volk hired nutritionalists, but it was the opposite way. It wasn't, you know, help me lose weight. It was help me put on good, lean mass. But Volk was time out of man. You've got, oh gosh, guys, gaining weight is so incredibly difficult and so incredibly unpleasant. I was trying to do this my senior year of high school. I weighed 174 pounds and I was wrestling at a weight class of 185 pounds. Gosh, it might have been 189. At any rate, I'm trying to gain weight. I had something called Ensure. Ensure is like a meal replacement. I think it's got some vitamins and nutrients and something like this, but it still had a lot of calories in a little can. I would have those in my lockers at school in between each class. Oh my God, I was drinking these things all day. I'd get up in the morning and my mother would make me chicken fried steaks and we put gravy on it. It was impossible for me to gain weight. I had a weightlifting class. Got an actual credit for it at my high school. How awesome is that? Then I would have high school wrestling practice. I would drive straight from there to club wrestling practice. So I'm working out three times a day. I couldn't gain any weight, but I will tell you, I was uncomfortable nonstop. So I just wish, like, I really liked it when Volk did it. I found it very compelling. I wish John would have done more of it. Okay, great. He chooses the weightlifting part. All of this is very interesting to me. He comes back out of nowhere after having a little bit of a back and forth with Francis. It was pretty clear that Francis fight was not going to happen. Francis was letting anyone that would listen know, I got a contract problem here. He was also letting anybody know, hey, before we even deal with my contract, I'm hurt. And he was. He had that knee redone. So when it became John versus Surreal, we got a little bit of excitement from the matchup coming out of nowhere. Not to mention, it was a false release. T-Mobile's marketing team screwed up and posted this before the UFC's marketing team had announced it. I'm just sharing with you, that was all fun. I liked it all. And now, John, who has given the audience what they said they wanted, a fight with him and Stipe. He waited. He was patient. He's giving you what you told him you wanted, but you have changed your mind. Which is a very dirty and nasty thing to do to John, by the way. It really is. I mean, here's a guy that genuinely was willing to take huge risks just to get a little pat on the back from the audience. Just to get a pass and the pat on the back and go, you know what, you're really good at this. And they're already taking that away through blasphemy and putting Stipe down and saying that he's too old and he's past his prime. But when this fight first got discussed, that was exactly the guy. And John was very careful before he agreed to it to come to you and make sure that you said, yes, that's the guy. So then you have an injury which delays it. Somewhere within that injury, we see the rise of Sergei Pavlich, which people are acting like they never even said. Like, that's a distant memory, but it was said. And then it went to Aspinall, and it brought in a little bit of Piera, and it appears to be back on Aspinall, and John Jones is focusing on Stipe and saying, to heck with all of you. Which, you know what? He had damn sure better do, because if he takes his eye off this Stipe ball, it's not going to go well. Okay. Now, Daniel Cormier, right? All the while, and all of this is because John throws an iPhone in a pool and the lawyer Eric posts it and sends me down this rabbit hole. All right. Daniel Cormier came out. He complimented Tom Aspinall. He said, hey, you know what? Tom has done a great job of keeping himself in the media, of keeping people interested in him. Now, the next thing to do for Tom, according to Tom, will be to fight for the undisputed title. And he doesn't really care, come hook or crook, how he gets there. I mean, by example, if you think, okay, then that's the winner of John and Stipe, it's like, well, no, not necessarily. Aspinall actually hasn't said that. He's just saying, I'm not fighting. You want to make my belt? I'm the active champion. I'm the current champion. I'm the highest champion that is currently licensed. And you're telling me I'm not the undisputed champion. You want to elevate my belt? Bring in anybody you want. John Jones, Stipe, they want to both go and retire. The belt becomes vacated. I slide into that spot against an opponent that you will pick. Fine with me. John Jones beats Stipe, retains the title. I draw into John Jones. Now we've got the undisputed. Perfect scenario. Tom is very open to this concept, right? As long as it involves an undisputed belt. All right. John telling people, not going to happen. Trolling him, pushing him away. But it's those very people that told him, we will give you credit and we will give you praise if you fight and can beat Stipe. So they took the carpet out. Sounder John is doing it back. Now, the most accurate thing here is what Dana White said, which is, I could not imagine John not fighting Tom. But before we get to that, you must understand, the moment the bell rings at Madison Square Garden, the instant the bell rings for round one of Jones Stipe, Tom is no longer the interim champion. So it is of paramount importance that Tom be out there and be building this fight with John Jones. In case you're wondering why Daniel could make that observation, in case you're wondering why Tom is out there, he's staying busy, he's still keeping attention on this, just in case you're wondering, like, he doesn't get that match by default. As clear as you guys believe that it should be for the interim champion to fight the undisputed champion, I don't disagree with you. I'm telling you, that's not what we're doing, though. You can keep talking about that all you want. It's not what we're doing. In fact, we just gave our interim champion something else to do called Curtis Blaydes, and we have a different thing for our undisputed champion called Stipe Miocic. Oh, by the way, when you think that gets settled, so now you have the interim champion versus the undisputed champion, you don't have an interim champion. That's what I'm attempting to explain to you. If you think Tom is the big shiny prize because he's got the interim belt and he's the active champion, he's the real champion, I don't disagree with that. But the moment the bell rings, you lose that argument. So you damn sure had better have another reason for Tom versus John. And it's a technicality, but it's a really big deal, and it keeps on getting missed. Stipe versus John Jones, how do you market that fight? What will go on with that? I gotta tell you, everything was done right and nothing's changed. Everything was done right for John Jones to take a risk, move up to heavyweight, capture the belt, look impressive while doing it. Stipe had one boogeyman that was keeping him interested, and that was Francis Ngannou. So Francis leaves, you're more than likely to see Stipe potentially leave, but he had such focus, right? Because this part of the story is forgotten. But it's a wonderful story. Stipe did the same thing that John did. John puts the belt down, goes up to heavyweight before he will compete, puts on size. He had a goal that he had stated on Instagram. I think it was an arbitrary number, but the number was 242 pounds. John didn't quite get there. I believe he weighed in at 236 and change. But that's pretty close. He had a goal. He got pretty close. Okay, great. Stipe did the same thing. Stipe had lost to Francis. Stipe had beaten Francis. One thing that was meaningfully different in the second fight was the scale. Stipe went from 248 to 233, and he realized, I'm not enough man. I need more size. My takedowns were getting stuffed tonight. I got them all in the last fight. The power that Francis had and my ability to take it, right? And Stipe's right. Size would have completely changed that. Would it change the outcome? That's between those two guys. But his ability to take a shot or his ability to have the horsepower to get takedowns, that really is very size-driven. That's the reason there's weight classes for boxing and there's weight classes for wrestling. They're so wildly important at what you're able to do. Stipe spotted Francis 30-some pounds. 32 pounds right out of the gate? Oh my gosh, it's a lot. So Stipe learned his lesson. I, too, am going to take a little time. I, too, just like John Jones did, need to have more size for this division if I want to be champion. They had the exact same philosophy. And coming from two world champions, that's a pretty important philosophy that we all stand back and go, okay, right? Like, if you had a Venn diagram and you were to look at it, weight matters. Both agree, both did the same thing, both come back together. Who should we fight? Put these two together. There's no Francis. John came up thinking of Francis. Stipe was in there thinking about Francis. John was not thinking about Stipe, and Stipe was not thinking about John. Like, everything comes together. That's the fight to make. But now more time has gone by. And I'm hearing that Stipe isn't in his prime. I'm hearing that Stipe is washed up. That's very tough language. But I'm just wondering how we got there. How did you get to that conclusion? John Jones took some time, put on some weight, went against Surreal Gone, and looked the best that he's looked in years. So now Stipe took some time. He's put on some weight, but we're not going to give him the benefit of the doubt and seeing if he can look better than he's looked in years. I mean, what evidence would you have that Stipe has slowed down? Did you come to that conclusion the night that he lost to Francis? Because you shouldn't have. He looked pretty good that night. He looked small, but he looked pretty good that night. Oh, by the way, if you did come to that conclusion, how come you're not speaking up until now? It was your idea to do the fight. It was your encouragement to do the fight. I will just tell you for the numbers. When I put John and I put Stipe together, I can do more business, more engagement, more interactions with that matchup than any other matchup. I can't get off the ground with Stipe versus Tom. I can't get out of the batter's box with John versus Tom. I do fully expect those things to change, but for right now, making the biggest fight, haven't we done that? And Tom became Tom. As good as he was, Tom became Tom in November of last year at Madison Square Garden when he ran over Sergey Pavlich. It wasn't the winning of the interim championship. That was a byproduct. It was running over, decisively stomping out. The guy was getting compared to Ivan Drago. And when you come to Stipe, I'm wondering how you're getting to that conclusion. I mean, are you certain if Stipe fought Tom Aspinall, are you certain Tom beats him? Are you really positive of that? Have you seen enough of Tom on his back to come to that conclusion? Are you willing to tell me that you think Tom's boxing is better than Stipe's? Now, I get it, heavyweight. Better and effective are two different things. The power that Tom has, I'm seeing it, believe me. I'm a believer in Tom. I'm just wondering if you say that that's the fight and Stipe's past his prime, then if I put those two guys together, Tom and Stipe, you would be very confident that Tom is going to win. But I don't think you're going to bet Friday's paycheck on that. I don't think if your feet got put to the fire, I don't think that you're actually as confident as you're pretending to be. And what has changed? Just time? I mean, I get that it's difficult. But that's the same tune I had when it got talked about in March of last year. March of last year is when Stipe put out the artwork on social media that he was claiming he got from the UFC, and maybe he did, maybe he didn't, but it was to fight for himself, to fight John Jones on International Fight Weekend, which is July of last year. For perspective, that was the night that Dricus du Plessis fought Robert Whittaker, just for perspective. So then that got the can kicked, and then got kicked again all the way till November, and it fell through, and here they are. But back then, I was singing the same tune. Back then, I told you, you got one guy who's fought one time in 3 years, and you got another guy who will have only fought once in 3 years. Oh, by the way, it lost. So I just don't know what's different. I don't know what's changed. However, I do think that that is the biggest fight. I do think that those guys' story will not be complete until they match up. And I'll also for maintain for you, you're not positive that Tom would beat Stipe. Which, if he can't beat it, then obviously Stipe would be the right guy, but you still have an order of it, and it still goes to Stipe first, and then it falls to Tom. And I'm just wondering, from a marketing standpoint, what are they fighting about? And that isn't just me challenging this. They know it too. They both started this, well, I'm going to retire. Both of them. John Jones, who never meant it, never even considered it. Somebody had said it, and John jumped on board just to see if that, like, helped ticket sales. And frankly, it didn't. It hurts things. If one guy's on his way out, if both guys are on their way out, this is a retirement party. It's weird, and it doesn't work. But when you get desperate to answer the very question that I'm asking you, which is how do you market it? What is this about? When you get desperate in that spot, you start reaching for straws. And for one of them, it is a retirement. For Stipe, it is. And if the one thing, the one last thing that he will do with his last dying breath is defeat John Jones, if that's true, I want to hear it. I want to hear that. I understand that he thinks he can beat him. Stipe is not going to come out after all this time and dedication to put on that size for a match he doesn't feel that he can win. I do believe that. I just need to hear it. If this is something personal, is if this is about a light heavyweight coming up, and make no mistake, the history books get rewritten if John wins. John and Stipe were the same time. They're the same era. Every day that Stipe was heavyweight champion, John existed. So if John can beat Stipe, then every single day of that heavyweight reign is bull. It's the same thing we found out with Mike Tyson. Mike Tyson is actually 2 years younger than Evander Holyfield. So every day that Mike was world champion, every single day that they came out and told us he was the best and he was number one, and Evander said, I can beat him. It wasn't a matter of two different eras or a guy out of his prime. Evander was older. He said, I can beat him. I am the rightful champion. We came through the amateurs. I went further. I have an Olympic medal. He didn't make the Olympic team. I was better then, and I'm better now. When he finally got his opportunity, he showed us there never should have been a day Mike Tyson was champion of the world. That's true. And that's hard. That's very hard stuff to hear. That's the truth. Those history books, we were lied to, and they should have been rewritten. That is what's on the line here. This isn't a matter of Stipe is no longer the champion. This will be evident proof that he never should have been. Those stakes are very high. That's the story that needs to be told. Men, when we leave the house, it's phone, wallet, keys, and how does my hair look? But if you're experiencing hair loss like the majority of the male population does, you may not be so confident when you step outside your door. It's time to get that confidence back and restore your hair with Hims. Hims provides access to a range of hair loss treatments that actually work, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted treatment options and clinically proven ingredients that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. They offer personalized chewable oral spray and serum treatment options, so you can find what works best for you. Reaching out for help in this area can feel a bit embarrassing, but Hims has made this process so dignified and simple. All you have to do is answer a few questions online, and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to your door. No in-person visits to the doctor or pharmacy are needed. The whole process is 100% online. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, so if you feel like you're losing a part of yourself with your hair loss, get Hims and get that confidence back. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/chale. That's Hims. HIMS.com/chale, like the famous gangster. For your personalized hair loss treatment options, HIMS.com/chale. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Uncle Iev, you're next. That's from Dana White. And he got asked about this. I believe this was by Kevin Ioli, but I don't want to take credit away from somebody else if it was. Dana White, Contender Series, and he went to a press conference. And those, by the way, are accidentally, those are the must-watch press conferences. Those are easily the best press conferences. Like, if you have one on Fight Week, which is where your standard press conference would be, it's really quite tailored to that event. Really quite tailored to that pay-per-view. To the point that Dana will even try to stop anything that goes over those bounds. I mean, you heard a million times, well, let's see what happens. It's one of those things, but that's his way of bringing you back. Don't ask me about anything beyond this pay-per-view and these Dana White Contender Series. These are the best press conferences. These guys don't offer any apology. They'll touch on the show that just happened, and then they'll go out there and they'll get the good. So that's a side note. Let me bring you back to this. Dana said, of course, Uncle Iev would be next for Piera, right? And he's talking about if they both win. And there's not a lot of times in the sport where this game has worked. I mean, you're counting on guys are going to fight. All right. So now they got to be healthy. They got to get through training camp. They got to get their weight down. They got to get everything signed. They've got to get their travel, get their visas. I understand that this sounds like a regular thing, but there's a few moving parts to that, and that's just to have those guys fight. Now, before we're going to get to that, one guy has got to get through Khalil Roundtree. I am telling you right now, there is nothing that Khalil does better than respond when kickboxers attack him. I mean, I'm just going to plant that in your head now, and I'm going to continue to plant this seed with you. There is nothing he does better than respond aggressively to a kickboxer's attack. Okay, great. So I'm just saying, that's a hard fight to get to. Not to mention, when an athlete finds himself in a fight that's harder than they thought it was going to be, and that could very easily happen to Piera, no matter how great Piera is, and he is. He's a human. And if he believes at all he's going to be stepping down, he's going to feel that by the time he gets in there, whether he wants to or not. He's going to be a 4-1 favorite. I'm making numbers up right now, but he's going to be a 4-1 favorite. There isn't going to be a ton of interest. He's going to go to press conferences. He's not going to get a ton of questions. I caught Khalil yesterday. Khalil in an interview, seems like a very sweet guy, but I caught him in an interview responding to a media member that showed up and asked him the question about him getting the title shot. And I can just tell you, like, I don't know. I don't know if Khalil can play this game. I don't know if he can meet him halfway. I don't know if he could hold up his end of the bargain by bringing attention and making sure that the weigh-ins and the press conference and everything else are skilled. I don't know. At the time that I clicked on the video, I do now know. That's not his forte. He is not going to uphold this and turn this accidentally into something. Okay, great. But let's look on the other side. So now you've got Uncle Iev, clearly the number one contender, at least according to you guys. And you know what? I do have a little bit of a problem with that. And it's not a huge problem, but I do have just a little one. Which is, Rejcik is that damn good. You gotta understand, Rejcik did not get a world title fight. Well, neither did Uncle Iev. But Rejcik did find himself in the next best thing. He's in a number one contenders match. That is quite literally the next best thing that you could get to a title fight. And he found himself there coming off of a loss. As a matter of fact, he found himself there coming off of a stoppage loss. As a matter of fact, finding himself in this spot actually moves him in front of the guy that he suffered the loss to in Prohaska. And I'm only telling you this because that's how good Rejcik is, and a lot of people have forgot. Rejcik looked good the night he lost to Prohaska. But he looked like a guy who had been out for a minute of time. To a guy whose conditioning just, it wasn't going to be right where he wants it, and there was no way to manufacture that. You go and spar, you can try to do that in the gym as much as it doesn't quite get you there. And on a guy like Prohaska, being able to dig deep, having that cardio is of paramount importance. And I will tell you that Rejcik was looking great. He was winning parts of that fight, for sure. And the matchmakers were able to see that. So that fight has a significant meaning. Like, that fight does need to happen. In many ways, let's just say that it didn't. Let's say Uncle Iev went right in against Alex Pierre. I would be arguing for you to look at Rejcik to take on the winner. And I'd have a hard time with that argument. You know, Chael, he's coming off of a loss. Yeah, I know, but there was more to that. Got up to 250 pounds. He was cutting weight. A lot of his efforts and energies just went into beating the scale. Like, that wasn't the world's best Rejcik, and he still looked pretty good. Can we agree on that? So, Uncle Iev versus Piera, okay? Now they got to go through this gauntlet. Now that we got a four-man tournament formed, we're going right into the semifinals, and the champ is part of it. I mean, when Dana said, obviously, Uncle Iev is next, when he said, obviously, you know the tone in his voice? He doesn't use that word very often. This was not a dance. This was not a game. This was not PR or marketing. He was answering a question very directly. Okay, great, but then we know we have a number one contenders match. If we have a true number one contenders match and the champion, whoever that is going to bring the belt to the next round, you've now got semifinals. You've got a four-man bracket. So in the light of a four-man bracket, will that make you want to see Uncle Iev versus Alex more? Uncle Iev gets over on Rejcik. Pierre has got no choice. He's got to show up if he, in fact, is the winner, right? He got to bring the belt. Do you want to see it more? Would that delay bring you? Because, see, that's the only game. If the answer to that is yes, we can get up and walk out of the room. We are all done here. That is a promoter's job. If the answer is no, or it's equal, right? That could be a learning lesson. And by the way, when you have tournaments, things fall apart, and there is no more dangerous round in a tournament. I don't care if it's the Final Four. I don't care if it's the Olympic Games. NCAA, your high school, state meet, whatever. The semifinal is the most volatile round of the tournament. Things never play out the way that you think they will, at least not straight across. So to get to Alex and to get to Uncle Iev, like, this is going to take a meaningful amount of work and a meaningful amount of effort. And it was strategic. It was very well planned. In fact, Dana had even given this within his answer as to why it was Roundtree. He said, whoa, Uncle Iev didn't get picked over. He didn't get looked over. He just wasn't picked. So Dana was kind of letting us know, like, no, there's a few names at the table, and his was one of them. But Roundtree, who's coming off five in a row, or I think it might be six in a row, and five of them were finishes. Like, Roundtree's got something really beautiful there, too. And he was the one that got the nod. And Dana did add, not to mention, at the time that we made the fight, Uncle Iev wasn't even available because he already had a signed contract with Rejcik. Now, I get that. Don't think you're the smart guy in the room that comes and unpacks that for me and that was by design. The author of the statement was also the author of the one that got him tied up. I'm not asking you that right now. I'm asking you, does that work? I'm asking you for you. If we got to go through a gauntlet, And we understand all the things that would have to happen to get those two through this. We understand that plans in this degree seldomly work, but if it does, well, Goliath can get over on Rachik. If Roundtree falls to Pierre, do you then want to see Pierre versus Goliath more? That's the only question. And a whole strategy, a whole thought process that orchestrated this before they brought it to you believes the answer is yes. I just want to hear directly from you. Michael Bisping made a comment, Adesanya's championship days are more than likely over. What do you guys think about that? I mean, what tough stuff to hear when you're that good. Like, there are definitely days that Adesanya could win the world championship. Right now, those skills that you just saw, had that very match played out. We're halfway through. 70% of the way through. But if it had just played out, I'm not sure he could have won that match. I'm talking about the skills here. If you took that version of Israel Adesanya and put him in there against anyone else, it would seem that that specific line to Maia would have been a bad matchup. But I'm trying to think, from Paulo Costa to Whitaker to this Russian guy whose name I will soon learn. Like, it seems like Israel could beat the top guys in the division. I will concede they could beat him too. I do understand that, but what a difficult spot. Izzy's awesome. And there was nothing made of the great elephant in the room, which is Izzy's layoff. There was nothing made of that. I don't know, as a matter of fact, that I saw a single headline that viewed this match as a return match for Israel Adesanya. I don't know of anyone anywhere, including Izzy, that even breathed or sneezed the idea that Izzy, from the day he started MMA to the day he got in there with Duplessis, has never taken a one-year break. Not to mention, I guess I'll leave it not to mention. But I'll share, it seems relevant to me, and what a tough spot. And are we going to go and do that again? I'll bring Nick Diaz in, but Nick had learned a very valuable lesson when he fought Robbie Lawler. And Nick's last fight, rematch with Robbie, that Nick had told us all, which was, ring rust is real. I'm not going to take those breaks again. And then he did. So Adesanya hasn't said that. But that's only because nobody's brought it up. Nobody has brought up the fact that Izzy, from the time he started his MMA career, has never turned down a match, but to get to this one, had two offers that got swatted. There was a meaningful break. We can't expect a guy to be at his best coming off of a break. We never do. We never expect a guy to be at his best. And I think he still looked really good. I think he could still be the champion of the world. That very performance that very night, had we just had another 10 minutes of it and avoided the choke, just for example, like, this was not a guy to me that looked like he was done. It didn't look like he'd slowed down, which is the first thing to go. They love to tell you that power is the last thing to go, which is not true at all. It's actually a stupid thing to say. But they never take the time to tell you the first thing to go, and the first thing to go is your speed. That didn't happen. We're not at that point. Yet Izzy is in a very interesting spot, which his contract is so lucrative. At the time that Izzy signed his contract, which I believe was in Atlanta, and I know was the week where he was going to headline against Robert Whittaker, a second time, part two. That contract that he signed in that moment made him the highest paid guy in the company. And when you have a deal like that, it can very much come back and bite you. It can make getting booked difficult. There's some guys with their pay have got to be used in the headlining spot. And Izzy's next match simply will not be for a championship. So he won't be in that spot. So where does he go? Now, there's plenty of ways you could do this. You get your calculator out, you figure it out. I'm not saying like this is a death nail. I'm sharing for you that Michael Bisping made a comment that Adesanya's championship days are likely over. And I'm just going a little bit further to share with you, like, getting a fight will be tricky at this point. Izzy does not fight. He does not want to fight. He does not do his best fighting unless it's personal. And one thing that I'm not sure Izzy understood, and it served him very well, is a lot of those guys that were coming after him, it wasn't personal. They were coming after him because he had the belt. And they're not going to come after him now. He doesn't have what they want. So Izzy's going to have to find that right guy. He's going to have to get a little something going. I don't know of anybody that does it better than him, but traditionally, Izzy is a counterpuncher. He will respond. He'll wait till somebody goes and says and does something first. And then that will be the spark that starts the fire, gets under his ass, and leads him into the ring. And that is not going to happen now. It's a different spot. It's a different game. The one in the game that you play as a main card guy or a co-main event guy is not the same one you play as a main event or a title fight. It's a different game. And I think that Bisping's very fair. I think he's very fair to say that championship opportunities are going to be behind him. I think finding some fresh blood in that division is very tricky. And being willing to take a risk, being willing to fight, right? You got two different rankings. You got 1 through 5, which is all that matters. But then they do take the time to list 6 through 10. And 1 through 5 generally, because they know it, right? You guys don't know it. It didn't get advertised to you, but they know it. So 1 through 5 does not like to have to fight 6 through 10. But there is real opportunity if you start welcoming and you stop eliminating guys. The question would come to hunger. How much does Izzy want to do it? I think that Izzy was going to retire in the ring. Daniel Cormier believes that Izzy was going to retire in the ring. Daniel's interview with Dricus du Plessis went so long. Matter of fact, it's the longest post-main event interview that I've ever recall seeing, and it went so long, I believe Izzy changed his mind. I believe when Izzy grabbed that microphone from Daniel and began his interview, he was planning to retire. Somewhere within that interview is where I believe he flipped it and turned and decided to not make that announcement. So let's see. I would be very open from Adesanya. I have been entertained. I feel as I owe Adesanya. He's given so much to the community. I'd be very open. But I would also keep everything on the table, including Izzy changes his mind from his changed mind that said he's not going to stop, and he might even go back to the fact that he is going to retire. Dan Hooker against Charles Oliveira. Where do you guys fall on that? Right? I mean, it's just a feeler. And by the way, if you come back aces, that fight will go and get made. Heard about this yesterday. Hooker. Dan Hooker had said, hey, I don't care. I'll fight anybody, but it looks like this is the direction the UFC is going in. I found that interesting for a couple of reasons. First off, that's fast. To be given news, to have news and idea of what's next or where you're going next within 24 hours after your fight, that's fast. Generally, if you would have information like that, that's a meaningful fight. That would be an important match. I can think of times, well, Shogun had a win. I'm going way back. I'm going 20 years ago. Daniel Lorenzo, right after the fight, he's still sweaty, walk into the locker room and offer him Chuck Liddell. I mean, there was a lot of times where it had to move forward. We need an answer quickly because we got a press conference. Like, I would just wonder why. I would wonder why that idea, and I don't know that it was an offer, by the way. I do not believe that Dan Hooker was offered Charles Oliveira. I believe Dan Hooker had a conversation that made him believe that they're leaning in that direction and see what happens. But that's still very, very fast to have an answer like that. We have world champions. Tom Aspinall doesn't know what's next. Just for example, he's been out of the ring for 3 weeks. So I do have to look at that. I would really wonder what they would be fighting for. I would very much be wondering, why are those two getting matched up? I mean, again, to go back to the example that I have of Shogun, where that happened, or to go back to our reigning champion and Tom, where that did not happen. What kind of placement do you think that fight would get? Hooker versus Oliveira. Are we on pay-per-view? Because that would change things, right? You could see where it wasn't. You could see where that would be a main event. But if we're talking about pay-per-view, which is where Hooker's last fight was and where Oliveira's last fight was, and even their fights before that and the one even before that. So if we keep on pay-per-view, we know that's not a main event. And would that be a top contenders match? Islam has competed with both of them, but there is somebody in this world that wants to see Charles fight Islam again. I realize it's none of you. I get that. But there is somebody whose opinion gets listened to that does. So, is that what we're working on here? Are we working on trying to get Charles back to this spot that people aren't asking for, but has been offered repeatedly to him? A spot that he has said in his own words, in every platform you can, from typing it out on social media to telling people in interviews to having an interpreter relay it to the local news. I don't want to fight Islam. Is that what this is? Go out there. What if we shine Charles up? Because if that's the case, I'm wide open to it. If that's the case, and I would suspect that it is, particularly if we got to start to get some kind of parity going. Right? We don't know if Sirkarian's going to stay in that spot. We don't know if Islam's leading the division. He's going to vacate as we're trying to get new blood. But I would ask you, would Dan also qualify for a title shot? I don't think you would agree. So, okay, if Dan doesn't qualify for a title shot, so it's not a number one contender for Dan, but it would be for Charles, which, by the way, I'm making this stuff. Like, I don't have this information, but I'm trying to work through it, and I'm a pretty reasonable guy. And I'm very good at letting history bend my trajectory to the future. So if we are going to look at it, it's not for Dan. Dan goes out and gets a jump on Charles. He does not go and fight for the world title against Islam. All right. But if Charles beats Dan, he more than likely will be offered for the fourth time a fight that he has made crystal clear he does not want to do. Then it would seem I've answered my own question of why did this information get to Team Hooker so quickly? And it would come back to somebody giving the shine to Charles Oliveira. And I'm just wondering where you guys sit with that. I'm wondering what you think about that. A lot of those 55-pounders have fought each other. Like, it's not the world's easiest thing to do. If you can find some parity, if you can find something new with top guys, you almost have to do it by default. You want to know something, by the way? I want an apology. I want to get my apology in. It was stated from Connor Burks, tatted Dan Hooker is undefeated and about to be ranked in the top five. And I wrote him back and said, well, you're half right, and that's an improvement. I have to apologize to Connor. Hooker got ranked in the top five. That should not have happened. I'm surprised that that happened. We don't know who that rankings committee is, but I think we can comfortably understand that Connor is one of them, and they spoke, and that's how they did it. But it comes back to the other point that I'm having with you, which is you don't have a lot of those top guys who would be new, who haven't already tangled with one another. And then you have the top guys that could greatly be served in one way, but they're going to take a very big risk. And that is to call out Patty. The big fight that people would like to see you do the big fight that's going to get the most reception and the most media and the most interview, which is how you make it anywhere in this business, or you could go and fight a guy that's plus 35 coming off of a loss, but somebody somewhere wants him back in the ring with Islam. It's one of those things, right? So what they're going to do at 55, it's a perennial division. And for the longest time, and Tony Ferguson's the one that did this, and no one's ever given him any credit. Tony Ferguson is the one that gave an opportunity to Charles Oliveira in the first place, somebody that wasn't in the top five. Tony was the top five guy that let somebody else come in and join the party. And Oliveira wasn't any better at that point. He just wasn't in there with the big names. And that all changed with Tony. So 55's got a lot of things to do. Got to figure out who the champion's going to be. And we got to do something big for Dan. And a lot of people backed my idea of a BMF. A lot of people jumped on that. And it just seems like whether we get there or not, it seems like that talk is very responsible and very respectful towards what we saw Dan Hooker did, not to mention the body of his career. That's how you get into the BMF. I mean, I'm just saying, it would seem as though the suggestion of Charles Oliveira, which came in record time, and ultimately they'd be fighting for no reason at all. And I don't submit for you that they fought Gamrot for any reason. There's sometimes you make fight for entertainment. Like, I do understand that. I'm just saying, if you're one of the guys and you got any stroke or any pull, which doesn't come along very often, but it happens to be something that Hooker's got in the palm of his hand right now, that's the times that you don't have to play that. You can start doing things because they matter and because they do have purpose, not just for entertainment and one night. And I think while the talk is still existing of, man, get this guy into a BMF, get this guy with a trajectory somewhere, and there's no reason that you couldn't have two hammers fight, and that's the number one contender for a BMF, by the way. But when you got one guy and you're trying to get him with a victory and take him into a world title fight that he clearly does not want, he can't be any clearer that he doesn't want that. And the other guy is just an afterthought. It's one of these things. It's one of these things that I would really proceed with some caution. I would proceed to find the right partner. I would proceed and I would look into Chael's little conspiracy speculation. Why do I know about this? Why was this presented in any fashion, whether it was an offer or a conversation starter? Why? Do I already know the direction they're looking and Tom Aspinall does not? Why did my phone ring? Why did my manager's phone ring? Why have I been told? Why do I even know the name and the idea? One day in, Charles Oliveira. On his eye in training, and Merab needed attention given to it. I would assume by a doctor, and I would assume stitches. And is that a big deal? Do you guys find that interesting? And what would you get from that? What would the takeaway be? I ask this because Merab has done as good of a job as anybody that I've ever seen. He has done as good of a job in the last 8 months at engaging with you, the audience, and using social media to do it. He has done as good as I've ever seen in the sport. So he's telling a story. There's a story there. And there's a choice, right? Because it's premeditated. He's getting filmed. He's getting the stitches, and he's getting filmed while getting the stitches. But it's relevant to the story, right? If somebody else is filming, if someone's over the top and they're filming this, you now are given a choice when this is sent to you, if you would like to upload that or hashtag it or put it out at all. So when you have this premeditation and you elect to do it, what is the story that is being told? I had a day one day, it was in 2003, and I was sparring right up the road from where my dad worked, and my dad brought two buddies in that day. to spar. And these guys had never seen MMA. My dad was trying to explain to him, oh, my son goes up here. And, you know, we kind of had a who's who with, you know, Randy Couture and Matt Lindland and Dan Henderson, right? It was kind of one of these cool things if you knew what it was. Like, some people would walk in the room and go, whoa, there's a UFC champion and he's training. These guys were not that type. That might be relevant to the story. Because sometime during the sparring, I got a bloody nose. And my whole life, I never had very many bloody noses. But at any rate, I get punched and I get a bloody nose. And this doesn't, like, stop the sparring. I continue and finish my workout. But I came over to say hello. This guy said, come in while we're working out. So I come over now that I'm going to miss a round, right? I'm out. I got a bloody nose and my gloves are off so I can hold this cotton. Say hello to my dad's two guests. And it was not the thought of, oh, wow, what a cool thing. Or, oh, wow, look at this. This sure is physical and contact driven. It was none of those things. They looked at me as though I had lost the fight, evident of the fact that I was bleeding. Guys that don't know fighting. One guy's bleeding, he's out. The other guys aren't bleeding, and they're in. Pretty clear who won. I didn't think of it like that. I realized it in that moment. So I thought of it in a different way. Hey, look at me. I'm working hard. I'm out there. I'm pushing hard. This is a real contact sport. Boy, is this ever a physical thing to do? How masculine is that? And all of those beliefs went away very quickly. And I could even see it in the facial expressions of my father and the tone in his voice. There was an embarrassment and a disappointment. I had clearly lost. So did Marab not know that? Has he not had that experience? Does Marab think what Chael used to think in 2003? That if you are bleeding and you have a wound to the point that a doctor needs to get involved, and that's just training. That's not even lie. That's just from our practice we go so hard. What a group of tough guys. What committed athletes and teammates we must have. It's how I used to think. So is that just how Marab currently thinks? Because there was nothing in viewing that the average person is going to think, oh, wow, cool. Look how hard he trains. Look how serious he is taking that. They're not. And there's a comment section on this on Instagram. You can go right down it. Who were you sparring with? Don't spar with that person. What a terrible teammate. Were you not wearing headgear or did they hit you with an elbow? Like, these are the actual comments that are on there. Who was the coach in the room? Why were you being stitched up in what looked like the room? We don't think that you have a doctor in your gym. Therefore, did some other person stitch you up? I'm sharing with you. These are the comments, and this was the thought. Was it a troll move by Marab? Was it a troll move to get reactions from people wondering if the fight would be canceled? Because that worked to a degree. Even Sean O'Malley reposted it and said he better not be pulling out of the fight. So is that what happened? And I have to ask you this because I don't know how many times or where we could go within this to find the positive. I don't know. I don't know where ID number three is where then this is a cool thing. I can't think of any battle wound that is a cool thing. I can't think of any cut and or bleeding or reason to bring to people's mind to the point that somebody would have to actually come in over the top and address this in terms of what is an athletic commission going to think. Charles Oliveira pulled out of a fight that was scheduled for October 22nd of last year, and he pulled out with a cut, not unlike the one that Dishlavili was showing last night. If I'm to be fair, Charles's was worse. But there wasn't a lot on Marab's. It wasn't pouring blood. It wasn't gaping. It would, if it was stitched, lead you to understand he's not going to be able to spar for a week or so, which right in the middle of camp or right towards the end of camp in the peaking phase, I suppose, wouldn't be wonderful. But nobody commented on that. Nobody brought that up. Nobody talked about it at all. They just talked about Marab, who had clearly lost and he lost in the practice room. How are you going to beat O'Malley or convince the world when you're the best in the world? You're not the best in the world. You're not better than the guy standing right there, apparently, because he's still working out and you're vertical. Horizontal? Laying down? And I do bring that to you because I think that probably is a hard assessment of Merab. I think that it is. I can just tell you, I was there. And I was in Merab's shoes where I thought that that was something of interest. I thought it was something cool. But I do remember the disappointment on my father's face when I did this in front of his friends that he had brought in to watch us. And then I realized and did the accurate math of, you're right, those guys are still doing what we're supposed to be doing. I'm not. And I'm not because I was hurt. And apparently, that's a really important thing in fighting. And it just speaks to a larger idea, by the way. I don't want to give Merab the world's hardest time. It wasn't that bad of a cut. It's just not any of my business. I should never know that that happened. And maybe I got something wrong. Maybe he was getting stitched and it was his own hand. He's coming over the top and he's doing it himself. From the angle of the video that I saw, I thought somebody else had come in over the top. Well, that's a very strange person to do. I would never film an injury. I would never document an injury. I just wouldn't. But I also wouldn't release it to any degree. It would not matter if I have life-threatening news. I'm not telling anybody. Do you want to know why? Because Superman's bulletproof. That's why. The moment you're now not bulletproof, you take yourself out of superhero category. Which for a guy that's going to headline the one and only show at the Sphere, which is apparently a really big deal for a world championship, like there's something super human quality, or there's not. Apparently there's not, because apparently if you hit him, he bleeds. Versus Ilya, the featherweight championship, BMF, not on the line. What do you make of that? Now, the BMF was never going to be on the line. Like, that was never a part of it. I don't know if the BMF has a lineage. I know that we have wanted it to have a lineage, but in fairness, we've wanted that because we have very little rules as it pertains to our title. Like, one thing from 1993 until present is we're going to fiercely adhere to whatever rules we make up on the spot. So we're kind of yearning as an audience for some type of uniformity, including with our championships. So a lineage to the BMF seemed pretty cool. But the other side of it is, to have the ability to make a BMF, to make a certain fight, a BMF, almost like yesteryear's Super Fight Belt, if you'll recall. Like, there's something about that as well. And Justin Gaethje was the first BMF to defend the championship, which is what gave us the idea that it would have a lineage. But let's just say it goes the other way, which is it's a one night. It's got to be assigned, just like the super fight, doesn't carry over. Let's say that we could see where Justin Gaethje would have been selected twice, right? We could see where Dustin versus Poirier, but we could also see or Justin versus Poirier, but we could also see where Justin versus Max. And I believe it does not have a lineage. I believe we have that answer. Now, we're always going to look to history and say, well, what happened before? So you had George Masvidal, who retired from the sport on 3 losses, and he retired from the sport, the BMF champion, because that title was not up in any of the matches that he lost. You might think it's a technicality, but that's not Masvidal trying to cling to something he didn't earn. The rules are the rules. The belt was either up or it wasn't. And it wasn't. So you now have Max going to take on Ilya. And there is a couple of questions there. Why would the belt not be up? I mean, how about that? Is Max the BMF champion? Well, again, all I can do is go to history. And on George Masvidal, the answer was yes. So it was not a one-night thing. George was able to bring that belt places, and they would acknowledge him as the champion. But when he fought, it was not always a title fight. So that's where it gets a little bit complicated. If it's a one-night thing, let's go and look for a couple of BMFs. Let's go see if we can get this done. Kayla Harrison, Amanda Nunes, boom. Let's go do the first women's BMF. I mean, I'm just throwing things at you, but we do kind of have to know. So let's look at why we would not put it up. First off, it's a title. If you are defending your title, you now get into legal territory that changes contracts, quite literally. Title matches are different. They're also different with commissions. They're different within the rules. But if we're doing a title match anyway, so we're going to go the five rounds and we've got to make scratch weight, why wouldn't it just be up? We've got the guys. Why not just put it up? Well, my guess is something along the lines of how effective it is for marketing. So if you had both belts on one guy, right? Like the featherweight title is good for marketing. Max versus Ilya Topuria is not a fight that you guys are dying to see. It's not a fight that you guys have ever been dying to see. It is not a fight that Max worked very hard to go and get. But Max returning to featherweight to fight for the championship definitely is. The potential round robin of Volkanovski, Topuria, Max definitely is. Topuria became the number one contender in a way that nobody else had. He was the one guy that made it to the top and made it to the title fight opposite Volk that did not have to go through Max. When nobody could get through Max, it became pretty clear if we want to shine a guy up and get him to a championship, keep him the hell away from that guy. We're going to make things even easier for you. We're going to book the guy somewhere else. We're going to get him out of the division, even if just for appearance reasons, so that we can get you in. Well, that story all of a sudden is much different. And while you might have thought that I just stated the obvious, I agree. It is pretty obvious. But let's not forget the marketing effects that that belt has. We agree. There's something that matters about the belt. So once we establish that, then we can also establish how coveted the BMF is. Not to mention how special the three BMF fights we've ever gotten are. To waste it or to use it in something that doesn't get a bounce, like in amateur sport, high school on down, it's a very cool thing to go out there and collect trophies. But in professional sport, what's the difference? Money. What do you think professional means? It means you get paid. So if we're admitting that it's money, then we admit the importance to marketing to help to draw that money. And if it all goes to the same guy, it's not overly helpful. So that would be a massive reason. Then contractually, and from a legal standpoint, the parts of Max's contract that would activate if he was defending a title. I mean, I'm just sharing for you, like, there's a lot of moving parts. It's not as simple as just put it up. Like, I had asked him, what if Max puts it up? What if Max comes forward, he brings the belt to the press conference, he says, no, this is for the belt. Well, that would be for a tangible object. But the title must be done contractually. It has to be, the title can only change hands. That becomes a legal term that the commission, amongst the many things that they do, will oversee and enforce. If a fight happens and it's a title fight, by example, and they decide they don't like the outcome, so the title stays with this guy, the commission will enforce. They will let you know, no, you may give him a belt if it's your belt. You may do anything you want. You may even say it, but it isn't true. He has the title, and there's different ways that he will be treated if he's a champion, particularly if he's defending a championship. And while we go round and around on this, before we come to the conclusion that it was the wrong decision, I'm not really sure that you mean that. I'm really not. I really wanted a lineage for BMF. I admit that, but I'm now realizing something else about myself. I wanted a lineage just because I wanted clarity of some degree. I was yearning for some type of boundaries. But now that we can have it, I'm not positive that is what I want. And I definitely don't want an undisputed champion to also have a BMF title. And you must understand, if Max was to lose but remain BMF champion, right? Just like George Masvidal. I mean, that would have been a pretty tough sell. George and Colby easily could have fought for a BMF title, but they didn't, and George then stayed champion. So George now in his next fight is still the BMF champion, and George versus Gilbert Burns, just for example. Two down the road, but the point is the same. I don't know that that would have been the fitting match for a BMF. So I don't know that we want that lineage. I like the super fight belt. I like the idea of super fight. I like champions. I like title defenses. I like all of these things. But I don't know how much I believe that Justin Gaethje did defend the belt. I don't know if I believe that. I know that's what we were told. But I had lost to, or rather, I had beaten a gentleman that was world champion. And the day before the fight, it got moved to a non-title fight. So that gentleman, Paulo Filho, gave me the belt, and I appreciated that, and that meant something to me. But he didn't have the ability to give me the championship. He didn't have the ability to give me the title. He could just give me the belt. And there's a meaningful difference. And the reason that I don't know that I believe that Justin Gaethje defended the BMF title as much as we made a BMF title fight and it happened to be with the same guy purely is tied in to the weight class. It was a 5-round title fight. We were all told that. But when we got to the weigh-in, they did not have to make scratch weight, which is absolutely required by law for a title fight. Go ask Charles Oliveira if you can show up for a title fight slightly overweight. So it's tough, right? It's a game of semantics, but it's fun. It's one of the reasons I like the belt. I'm glad that he's not defending. I'm glad he's not putting it up. I'm glad the next time we see a BMF title, it may not even involve Max. As bad as he is, I'm just sharing for you that we can make it with other guys. There's some rough boys out there. There's some rough girls, too. So to have the idea and the concept that we can assign it, we know it when we see it. As much as I resisted that idea, and as much as I would love the idea of a lineage, the more that I'm looking at it, the closer I look at it, I'm not certain that's the right answer. As much as finding the right two fighters and putting a spotlight on that fight and capping the event off with a BMF title. Alright everybody, that is it for today's episode. Thank you for listening, and thank you for those of you that leave reviews on Apple Podcasts. I read them all, and I particularly like this one from Jordan, who simply says, Uncle Chael knows all. He is the best in the business. Well, thank you for that, Jordan. I hope that you have a great weekend, because you left me 5 stars, so I know I will. And for the rest of you, we meet again on Tuesday. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen. And you are welcome.